All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. We had Nick Caserio join us a little bit earlier. Oh, Junior Tafuna's back. He's on the practice squad, the defensive tackle. I just looked. The Texans just sent out a notification. Anytime I say Houston Texans transaction this time of year, I'm like, ooh, who did they get? Who's back? Junior Tafuna is back in the building.
DeMeco is not taking any chances with defensive tackles this year.
No.
Last year he had three guys on IR, was it?
Yeah. They got hit hard with injuries last year.
A boatload of defensive tackles on IR. And it was a factor. There were a couple times, you know, and really the fourth quarter of the preseason, the fourth quarter of the Patriots game, you're not blaming the Texans defense for that loss, but they were in a position where they needed to stop the run if they wanted any chance at all of winning that game, and they just couldn't do it. You know, and I think that's DeMeco. That sticks in DeMeco's brain. You know, that's something that's going to drive him crazy all offseason long.
Yep. So it's interesting. We're going to hear from Nick Caserio in a second on the C.J. Stroud contract situation. In fact, let's play it now. This is from yesterday because ESPN was talking about this on First Take just moments ago. And I'll read the caption in a second as to what they had. Well, I'll read the caption first. They were discussing, obviously, they got wind of Nick talking about CJ's contract situation in yesterday's press conference. And the caption at the bottom of the screen, as Stephen A. Smith and a handful of other people are discussing this, Seth, says, "More motivated to get deal done, Stroud or Texans?" And then the subtitle, the smaller writing, says, "Texans GM sets week one deadline for Stroud extension," which I'm like, I don't recall any deadline being set. This was Nick when he was asked about the contract situation with CJ yesterday.
As it pertains to CJ, yeah, I mean, kind of similar to what I said there in training camp. You know, we've had productive discussions. I would say, and the reality is, we'll either get it figured out before the season starts, and if we don't get it figured out before the season starts, then it'll be something we address in the offseason. So, you know, whenever it happens, it happens.
Okay.
Whenever it happens, it happens. There's that part of it. I guess, go ahead.
Well, no, and he goes on to say in that press conference yesterday, we've done deals before the season. We've done deals in. I think he said it with us like an hour ago. Like, we do deals in season.
Yeah.
You know, and quarterbacks, I get, are more unique situations than regular deals. But that there's nothing about that cut there that tells me like he was setting a deadline of getting it done.
No, and honestly, the way ESPN is trying to say it is like, okay, for an extension until, you know, if we want to do it this year.
Yeah.
But if I read that literally, it would sound like there'll never be an extension if they don't do it.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Texans GM sets week one deadline for Stroud extension. All right, I'm going to take it literally the way you wrote it, and that means there's never going to be an extension.
That's true.
So the last time a starting quarterback got an extension in season after game one was 2011. It was Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I know immediately, because this happens every time, somebody's going to text in and say, "Nope, Matt Schaub. Nope, you're wrong. Matt Schaub, they did the deal before week one. It wasn't announced until after game one." And that's happened with a couple other quarterbacks. So it's very rare for you to mess with a quarterback and talk extension and everything. I'm guessing because those are types of players that want to be dialed in and focused on football.
A lot on their
team,
plate.
You want
yeah.
them to be dialed in and focused on football. So
yep.
whether it would happen or wouldn't happen, CJ hasn't operated in any kind of a way where he's expressing frustration about it.
Yeah.
I think they are at an amicable impasse right now.
Yes.
And, or at least as amicable as it can be in situations like this.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong and we hear about an extension 3 days from now, but it feels like they're probably not that close, and it's barring somebody coming with something to the table, you know, drastically different. I'm guessing this will be what we're talking about in February.
Can I confirm some breaking news here?
Yeah.
I've confirmed with the person who's the genesis of this caption here that he never said anything of the sort.
Yeah.
that a deadline was set for week one to get a deal done. So that is confirmed. All right. Let's hear from Ian Rapoport. NFL insider. We'll have Ian Rapoport lay this out. The CJ Stroud contract situation. That CJ Stroud, this is the market that Ian Rapoport thinks that CJ kind of lives in right now.
It is. Now, the first part of it is The Houston Texans know they have their franchise quarterback, and that's C.J. Stroud. They have had discussions about a big-time, long-term deal. And considering where he left off last year, this is good news. This is a great place to be for C.J. Stroud. As far as his decision goes, certainly seems to be this. Now, quarterbacks at his level, and there are several of them, Trevor Lawrence, Jared Goff, and there are a bunch of them who make somewhere between $52 and $55 million based on new money. Jordan Love is in that mix. Really good young quarterbacks make that kind of money.
Okay, so Rappaport is intimating there, though, yeah. that's the category, that's the tier that CJ lives in right now.
Right.
The Trevor Lawrence, Jordan Love tier.
And what a lot of people would say is, okay, those are the contracts over the last few years that guys like Justin Herbert have gotten, that $52 to $55 million per year. When Herbert signed that deal in 2023, that was 23.4% of the cap.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to make a deal, if you were to give a guy a deal now and say, okay, it's like Justin Herbert's, but the cap has expanded, make it 23.4% of the cap, that would be a $70 million contract, $70 million per year contract. So that's where a lot of every agent is going to start with that. They're going to say, look, if we want Herbert's deal, then we got to adjust for the cap inflation. And meanwhile, Nick told you and I earlier this morning that they don't operate that way.
Yep.
They don't look at percentage of cap and determine or evaluate quarterback contracts that way. So that might be the impasse right there.
Could be the sticking point.
They're one of many impasses.
Yep, it could be. It's purely a guess, but that could be a sticking point. The one thing that we can confirm, like you said, Nick Caserio said on this show earlier this morning, we don't do the percentage of the cap thing.
Yeah.
Not how we've operated, it's not how we're gonna operate. So that's worth noting. Here's Rappaport on what CJ Stroud's options are.
So his options are essentially this: get a contract extension of around there, not sure at this point where that would come in, or wait. And if CJ Stroud elects to wait, that's when it gets interesting. You're right, they do have him under contract for two more years, so after the season, would still have 1 year left, they could do an extension at that point. But the 2026 season would then go into the equation of how you value C.J. Stroud. And consider the Texans have one of the NFL's best defenses. They have all sorts of weapons on offense. It sounds like Stroud has had an excellent, excellent training camp. If he goes out, kills it this season, they go deep into the playoffs, then he's got even more ammunition to make more than the Texans offered him this year. Obviously, that's a gamble, because there is the downside as well. So what Stroud and the Texans have to figure out is there a path toward a new contract before the season, or is it, as Caserio said, something they table until next season?
I think this is one of those things, man, where I think both sides have their view on CJ's value. I think on CJ's side, it's probably viewed more as what his potential value would be if he goes out and improves this year and looks more like the CJ we saw a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those situations. I don't want to say it's a rare situation, but it's certainly one that I think is good for both sides. Like, I think both sides have their feelings on it, and it doesn't seem like their noses are bent out of shape over this at all. Outwardly,
yeah.
At least. You know?
Right. And
CJ's been very professional about this whole thing.
Baker Mayfield's having a hissy fit at the beginning of training camp about how he's offended by the offer they gave him. It can be that extreme. You know, various other quarterbacks in the past have unfollowed their teams on social media or whatever. There's been none of that out of CJ. It feels like a low bar to have to clear.
Yeah.
I mean, that your quarterback doesn't act like a petty little bastard. But that's what previous quarterbacks have done.
Yeah.
And then gotten paid $55 million a year because of it.
Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
You know, and with him, he let his agent do the dirty work. But we haven't heard a boo from Mulligetta on this either. Like, the whole camp has been very quiet. CJ's camp, that is. You know, it's...
Yeah.
And look, ultimately, David Mulligetta works for C.J. Stroud. So I would hope that would be the encouraging thing to me, Seth, is that the way C.J. is handling this, if he is sort of leading his team, and I don't mean the Texans, I mean leading his representation on how he's wanted this handled.
Yeah.
That's a really good sign, I think, as to what his maturity level is in dealing with this.
Yeah, they're handling it like professionals.
Yes.
No, yeah, Kyler Murray, he did in February of that year, he unfollowed the Cardinals on social media.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't just his agent. Yeah. It was like all this stupid little ticky-tack annoying stuff.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting rewarded for it. So, I mean, like, sometimes if you create even more of a controversy, you get rewarded for it. But, like, so CJ, to his credit, has not followed that in my opinion, BS tactic.
Nope.
We have to go out and show it. Like, I'm one who's, we don't have to keep talking about what we're going to do or what do I think, who we're going to be as a team, what we're going to do. There's nothing to talk about in my mind. It's a matter of us showing. Showing is is the proof. And that's what we have to go out and show it, and people will see it.
That was Texans head coach DeMeco Ryans from earlier in the week talking about his offense. And I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, the context from the offense this season, you know, this preseason so far, John, has been far different from what we experienced last year, where the defense whooped that ass every single day. Mm-hmm. This year, I remember two occasions John Harris saying that it was the best Texans practice that he'd seen ever. Okay. And look, that to me says a lot for a guy that's seen more practices than anybody else here in the city of Houston for about the last decade.
That was pretty much what he said.
And look, you've been out there, you've watched it, and we've read the reports, and we've talked to the guys, and we know everything that the Texans have done in terms of, you know, improving that side of the football. And it just got me thinking, man, for a guy in DeMeco Ryans who, you know, has helped architect this philosophy, right, from the offensive side, now it's like, okay, this is great. It's cool to do it in joint practices in the preseason. Now we got to go out and prove it to ourselves, prove it to everybody else when the games actually matter. It gets me thinking about, okay, the bold proclamations that could be made about this football team. If the offense is to literally go from the bottom third to somewhere in the top third this season, which is almost a necessity to accomplish what you ultimately want to do, bold proclamations are to be had from that side of the ball. It's too easy to give us the defensive stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
However, that's what Dan Graziano did when he put out his not-so-bold but realistic Texans predictions and said that Will Anderson Jr. is going to lead the NFL in sacks this season. I said, okay, cool. He ain't the only one to say that. Micah Parsons, who spent a lot of time with Will Anderson this offseason along with Danielle Hunter, doubled down on that as well, said the same thing. And it would not shock me. That is not bold. But what is the boldest thing you can say about this Houston Texans team going into the season, in your opinion, John?
First of all, I love this question. You know, what's the boldest thing you could say about the Texans this season? 713-572-4610. I almost feel, you know, to follow up on what you said, you almost have to disqualify the defense. Because even, and we've talked about this as well, even if you said this is going to be one of the greatest defenses in NFL history, I don't think that's that bold. I really don't. If you want to put this with the 2000 Ravens and, hell, go back to the 85 Bears, I don't think that's that bold of a prediction based on what we've seen with the ends and certainly Al-Shaair in the middle and the two cornerbacks, and you're bringing in – right. How is that bold? I mean, yes, I guess by definition, because those are the greatest, you know, recognized as the greatest among them in NFL history, but I don't think anything on the defensive side is that bold, including Will Anderson Jr., you know, leading the league in sacks, or hell, Danielle Hunter leading the league in sacks, or – you know, the Kalen Bullock, you know, who's a guy that I've been extremely high on, leading the league in interceptions. I don't think that's that bold. So I think you have to turn to the offensive side of the ball.
Absolutely. Yeah. How do you do that? Being bold, yet realistic at the same time. What I'm reminded of is what this team looked like in 2024 when they went out and they got Stephon Diggs. I had conversations where it looked very realistic. That Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs could all vie for 1,000-plus yard seasons that year in that offense, and we ultimately know what happened. You know, Tank didn't play a full season. Diggs played half of a season. Nico missed, 3 weeks or something like that as well. And it didn't pan out in year two of the Bobby Slowick offense. But that would have been bold because that does not happen in the NFL. It's only happened maybe two times where you've had a trio of receiver core that has amassed 1,000-plus yards, the latest of which I believe was Arizona Cardinal receiver core back in the early 2000s. I could be wrong on that, but what is it for this Houston Texans team this year that is the boldest but realistic thing you could say about them? It has to come from the offensive side of the ball, is the most convenient thing to say that the running back room is maybe the best, the deepest, most productive that we'll have seen since Arian Foster?
You're in the same neighborhood as where I went immediately. And okay. And this is extremely bold. Trust me, I'm not necessarily making this prediction. But if the question is, what's the boldest thing you can say about this team and realistic? Two running backs with 1,000 yards from scrimmage.
Two? Woody Marks and Demo.
Would be mine. Because they're not going to just each run for 1,000 yards.
Right.
Because they're going to split so many carries. But they are going to catch the ball. Both mm-hmm. of them are going to catch the ball. One of the practices that John Harris was talking about, Reggie and I got a chance to see because we were in the press box, and you know David Montgomery went for 80 against this number one defense. Went for 80 yards out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
We know Woody Marks they're going to use, in out of the backfield as a receiver as well. The last time it happened, David Montgomery was one of the guys. He and Jahmyr Gibbs both went for over 1,000 yards from scrimmage. Now that's receiving and rushing.
Yeah,
I think the year before that was in 2021 that happened. So I can't predict that to happen because it's such a rarity. But if you're saying realistic, I'm gonna go with that. I'm gonna go two backs, 1,000 yards from scrimmage.
That is a great one, man. Yeah. That is a really great one. And it's funny, too, because I think it was a couple of nights ago, mm-hmm. a coach from North Shore, called into the show, and we were talking about that. And I'd said something in relation to the running back room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, dude, David Montgomery, when's the last time he's run, for 20-plus yards in a game? Well, it happened twice last year from a receiving standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
He caught and ran for 70-plus yards. And for 30 plus yards mm-hmm. and had one run of 20 plus yards, David Montgomery last year,
mm-hmm.
the year before that, there was many other opportunities or moments in which he had explosive runs. And his thing was, dude, how explosive can David Montgomery actually be? David Montgomery's dropped a little weight coming into this season. And I think that's for maybe a couple of reasons. One, by way of how the Texans think they're going to use him or mm-hmm. want to use him. And then two, maybe what older running backs mm-hmm. tend to do to try to, extend a little bit more life out of themselves. And maybe you feel like you could do that when you have a better run blocking offensive line in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really good one.
It's rare. I just looked it up. It's rare. We're talking about Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram in 2018, Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery in 2024, Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon in 2021 for the Packers. And 2008, Brandon Jacobs and Derek Ward each cleared 1,000 yards. So it's clearly that's four times it's happened since 2008. So again, it's impossible.
And these are just two running backs, right?
Two running backs from the same team.
Okay,
with more than
because
1,000
did Lamar
yards.
Jackson and Derrick Henry do that?
Maybe
I think they did that, but yeah. Obviously
I'm talking
Lamar
about running backs.
Yeah,
and so I think it's. And the other thing that led me to this is I don't see them just ripping the ball. We've talked about this multiple times, mm-hmm. down the field. I see them using the backside of the backfield a lot as receivers.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I absolutely do. We've got a lot of bold predictions coming in on the text line regarding CJ. One says from the 713, CJ matches or outperforms his rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
CJ is going on an MVP type of season. From the 832, for the first time in their history, the Texans will be the one seed. Another one right along the lines.
If you want to look big picture, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Another one from the 832, I'd say Woody and Demo both get 100 yards per game from scrimmage, kind of like what you're saying. Tank Dell wins comeback player of the year with an electric second half of the season from Nathan Huffman.
That's bold.
You can keep them do a lot in that second half.
You can keep them coming in, 713-572-4610. Maybe another way to kind of ask this question as well, this is where my mind went, is, is there an area on this team that you could see significant regression and withstand it to keep your Super Bowl legitimacy alive, right? And when I ask that question to myself, I think about the secondary immediately,
mm-hmm.
in that you got a whole bunch of ball hawks back there, and you got another one in this offseason in Reed Blankenship. Could this Texans defense withstand a significant drop off in the takeaway numbers defensively overall?
Ooh, baby.
And still be considered, you know, a top tier defense and Super Bowl contenders? I say yes, because there's got to be a little give and take, John. You know, the chance that you're looking at a generational type of defense here, again, a number one defense, very real. But it's also, in my mind, a more realistic possibility for there to be a regression to the mean, but a progression back to the mean on the offensive side of the ball as well. So you give a little bit from the you give a little bit for the offense, turnovers, and you take away bit from the defense. You know what I'm saying?
I'm kind of hesitating because I think you're probably right that they could maybe, you know, sacrifice some turnovers for they're still going to be a shutdown defense, you know, breakups and sacks, and they have to be good against the run. They have to be better against the run. And I think they will be, you know, with the bolstering of the interior defensive tackles.
I mean, they improved at points last year, right? You remember that miserable first month of the season where quarterbacks got loose on that defense. You know, there was no linebacker for the quarterback in those late game situations. They didn't let that happen beyond that first month.
You know?
I mean, and they got bit by Baker Mayfield. They got bit by Cam Ward. It didn't ultimately cost them, but he took advantage of it. There was about 4 weeks in a row there where quarterbacks, they got them.
And we just talked about some of, you know, the Bo Nix and the Baker Mayfield and all that stuff.
Yes, Bo Nix was the other one, I believe.
Yeah, and so you have to be better against the run, because if you're not better against the run and you don't, you know, you don't have as many turnovers, that then you're not an all-time defense, because they're going to be able to control the ball a little more and move the chains a little more, and you're not going to be able to give your offense, which wants shorter fields, and special teams comes into play on that, that makes the offense, your offensive success, that much more difficult.
I just ultimately think that, you know, from a defensive perspective, you can be a really good defense and not turn the ball over, you know, not have as many takeaways as the Texans have accrued over the last couple of years, because of the sack totals, because of the stuffs, because of the improved run-stopping ability of that front seven that the Texans defense employs.
I think the one thing you cannot regress defensively is the sack totals, because then all of a sudden you're thinking, all right, is Danielle Hunter, is the clock finally ticking a little bit? We expected more out of, you know, Will Anderson Jr. I do expect their sack totals to go up, by the way. I'm just saying, if, in terms of your question, where can you afford to regress and still, you know, be real good? You've got to be able to keep the sack totals up, if not, you know, more.
By the way, you know, I'd mentioned Dan Graziano's bold yet not so bold Texans take. Will Anderson going to lead the league in sacks? Do you have a number in mind when I tell you, like, okay, hey,
19,
so-and-so, 19, right? Somebody said 20 to me. It was Bryson, our producer on Area 45.
17, 18, 19.
I said, you know what, 20, that's good, because I think a lot of people think of 20. Only 8 times since 2001 has the NFL's league leader in sacks accrued 20 or more sacks in a season. It is special. Miles Garrett just had 23 last season. T.J. Watt, 5 years ago, led the league with 15.
Yeah.
Right? It's been anywhere from 15 to 23.
Mm-hmm.
Will Anderson's had 11 and 12 in consecutive seasons.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to take this year?
For him to lead, I'd say 17 to 19.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
And he's going to have company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially with Danielle Hunter. I just told you, Micah.
He's going to take some.
Micah Parsons predicted that, you know, either both of those guys, they're going to be rivaling each other for the league lead in sacks. And yeah, it very well could be Miles Garrett, too, who's coming off of a 23 sack season. But I think, too, you've got Jadeveon Clowney here. You've got so many freaking dudes competing for bringing the quarterback down. Never mind the Texans' interior, you know, between Togiai and Rankins. Let's see how much, you know, Logan Hall factors
McDonald,
in.
McDonald, maybe. McDonald, later absolutely. In the year. Yeah.
Absolutely. The maturation potential for Caden McDonald this season.
So the boldest predictions have to be on the offensive side, as I just said. With the running backs. If I had to pick one bold prediction on the defensive side, I'm leaning more toward Kalen Bullock more than Reed Blankenship. He's such a ball hawk. I mean, just such. He's just got a lot of times we always talk about how well they're coached and their fundamentals and, you know, and just being able to be smart and all that. Sometimes you just have the gift. So, you know, like sometimes, and you coached, you know, there are, I'm sure you saw multiple in your career, you know, multiple running backs that were all similar in size and stature and intelligence and athletic ability. But one of them just had the gift, you know, the gift of being able to run the ball.
Yeah.
I think the same thing is with the ball hawk in the secondary. I think Kalen Bullock just has that gift.
I think sometimes, and Damian Pierce reminds me of this. Mm-hmm. Okay. You remember after that breakout season of 1,000 yards from scrimmage, mm-hmm. he just could not put the playbook together and figure out like the way that they wanted to use him and he was comfortable with. I bring that up because when you coach youth football, you see some dudes that have just uncanny, innate, God-given ability.
Yeah.
And they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
They're just going to hit the sideline and go. And nobody can catch their ass. They run the wrong way, but it don't matter.
But once you get to high school and college.
Then you're found out. Yeah. You know, you're playing up against guys that know what the heck's going on. Mm-hmm. But you go through that when you coach, you know, younger players against an inferior opponent. And I kind of think of Damian Pierce mm-hmm. in that regard. Like, he was so damn good mm-hmm. and such a ball of hate going through the line his rookie season. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. But it caught up to him very, very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, welcome back as we are live here on The Drive, a little day baseball game, and looks like there's a potential Tyler will get to play a little celebration music right now as the Astros threw six innings. They lead 6-2, and shout out to Hunter Brown. Someone, what if somebody texted and say, my, doesn't Ron feel dumb now? Hunter Brown, six innings, two earned, just like Dirty predicted. Oh, I don't feel dumb. You know, hey, you're in this business. Sometimes you miss on a few. He really rebounded.
I mean, to be fair, you just stood by your anger. You did not, your frustration. You didn't, I mean, you simply said, I don't give a damn what he does from here on out. This is inexcusable.
Oh, I did not think that it was going to spin and turn into him being able to get through six innings.
That we talk about.
Through six innings. I did not. This is time to get Bennett Sousa some work here. No, I did not. And he was at 69 pitches through three innings and was able to make his way through six. And right now, he's giving them a quality start. Six innings, two runs to the White Sox, and he's in line for a win. His offense, I will say, the facts of the situation. His offense really came through big in that one inning, getting four in, and he was kind of able to come out to be aggressive and did the job of that. Sometimes pitchers don't do that. He came out and was really aggressive, six pitches in that inning, and was able to finish the White Sox.
If you're the ball boy down the baseline there, sitting where the wall comes out by the bleachers a little bit, by the stands a little bit right mm-hmm. there. And a ball bounces off that wall, caroms off that wall like it did right there. What kind of vibe are you running out there and getting it with? You dragging like old buddy was right there?
Hard
are you
jog.
You going hard jog?
Hard jog.
I mean, when you come off the stool, are you thinking, all right, get my knees up, maybe pump my arms a little bit?
No, yeah, I'm being seen. I'm gonna give you something.
Probably best I don't ever have a boy.
Why?
Because I would, if my son drug his old feet out there going to get that ball like that, I'd probably critique him. I'd be sitting over there in the bleachers right next to his stool and say, hey, man, pick your damn knees up.
You got it. So for you, he's the ball boy. You're going to be right there too, right?
Well, I mean, it's either there or home. At home, one way or another, if I look up there and he's dragging them old feet across the top of that grass. Yeah, hey, man, pick your knees up, man. I mean, whoever's handling that fine grass out there in the outfield at Dykin Park, you just drug your damn cleats halfway out in the outfield, man. Pick your feet up, son.
Okay. Well,
sorry, whoever his dad is, I'm just trying to help.
You think he's ticked off? You think his dad's annoyed by that?
No, if he's doing
his dad may be a foot dragger too.
Chief, if he's doing it that age right there, I doubt dad gives a rip about them feet dragging.
He's so proud of his son. He's the Astros ball boy.
My boy's gonna be out there.
6'2".
Have a little sense of urgency, man. You ain't playing video games.
There you go. 6'2". There you go. Woke Tyler up.
Look at old Tyler.
Your hatred for video games is so fun.
You ain't sitting in your room playing video games, son. Damn, there's 20,000 people watching you. Pick up your knees.
6'2", as they are in the seventh inning. We'll keep you updated on what's going on there. All right. We get a lot of texts, and we get a lot of conversations in the text line from Twitter to YouTube to Twitch, all over social. That's what we love. We love the interaction with our listeners and our audience. And somebody hit me up with this yesterday as we were kind of talking about CJ and the contract stuff. And they were like, hey, Ron, because this felt like a legit question. Now, some people are just being an ass, and then they seem to act shocked and surprised when they're being an ass to me and I meet them by being an ass to them, because I will go down into that basement with you. But this one, I could tell, like, this seemed like a straight-up serious question. They said, hey, Ron, out of curiosity, what has sold you on C.J. Stroud so much? Why are you so locked in on this guy being that good? I just don't see it. He had a great rookie year. No doubt there's talent, but what locked you into making you think he is our quarterback? I would like to hear. And so, you know, Tyler, Clint, I listened. I was like, you know what? I want to give some real context and evidence to really why I believe some of the statements that I see on this text line and I see on YouTube and I see on Twitch and I hear from national people and I hear from some people is just absolutely brain dead crazy to me. One of the things that I did when I read that, I was like, all right, you know what? Let me look at the guys that's been around him. And see, that's why with you, Clint, we can have these conversations. Because I don't think, Clint, you question if he's good or if he can play. Your questions, I think, you tell me if I'm wrong, too, if he has the leadership qualities that you think someone needs to have to lead to a championship, and if he is worth it enough for them to be able to play with the type of team that they want to play with.
Yeah, my opinion is far beyond is he good or not. It's not even funny. I mean, there is no anybody that tries to sell that C.J. Stroud can't spin it with anybody in the league. I mean, obviously Aaron Rodgers and the Pat. I'm just talking about can't throw the ball effectively and pass the ball at an elite NFL level is crazy. It's not about what he's capable of doing. For me, the conversation about C.J., which is the one I hear most of the time, is, you know, is he worth $60+ million? We've gone from about 50+ to 60+. Is he a piece, or is he a pillar? Right? Is he one of those guys that's an alpha and can take over an organization, or is he just a quarterback that can produce and is talented? That's where I'm at with that. For me, that's the conversation around C.J. Stroud.
And so I can get with that. Right, that's why I think we can have common ground and have conversations whether we don't see complete eye to eye on CJ or not, because I can understand the space that you're coming from, and it's a space that makes sense. Some of this other garbage don't make sense. But I went through Clinton Tyler and I said, all right, I just want to see who he's played with on the offense side of the ball. I just want to look through and see all the guys, because he's only been here 3 years, right, Tyler? He ain't been here 10 years.
Correct.
He is. He's been. This ain't 9 years where it's a long stretch of guys. This is 3 years.
We're familiar with him now, but he ain't been here a decade.
What'd you say, Clint? Like the average years somebody plays is just over 3 years. Mm-hmm. Is that what the
for
average?
A reason? Yeah.
Yeah. Just over 3 years. So then 3 years. Let's not talk about that. He's had two offensive coordinators. We know that part. He's also had two offensive coordinators. Who both of them, it was their first time on the job doing that, right? Two vastly different styles and systems, and at times it looks like one is working against what his natural skill set is. I went to all the offensive spots. I started at wide receiver. Tyler, these are the people, since he's entered the league, that he's played with. Now, I didn't just put down people who were just on the roster, Clint. I went and put people who have actually played in games with him. Nico Collins, bang up. Tank Dell, he's on the IR, has not played since 2024. Noah Brown, out of the league. Robert Woods, out of the league. John Metchie hanging on as a third stringer with the Panthers. Hutchinson, fourth best receiver here for the Texans. Stephon Diggs, four teams in 4 years, but a good football player. Deontay Johnson, out of the league. Steven Sims, out of the league. Higgins on IR. Noel, still here with the Texans. We'll see what he does this year. You remember Applebee's 2-for-20? Christian Kirk, he's on the IR right now with the 49ers. Braxton Berrios, practice squad with the Giants. Jared Wayne, 2 career catches, but he is in the league right now. Justin Watson, out of the NFL. Running backs, Devin Singletary, out of the NFL. Damian Pierce, practice squad with the Eagles. Dare, practice squad with the Raiders. Joe Mixon, out of the NFL. Cam Akers, out of the NFL. You remember J.J. Taylor? Out of the NFL. British Brooks, Andrew Beck, woo, hanging on with the Jets, still on the roster. Andrew Beck is still with us. Marks, and then Jawaard Jordan, who's on the practice squad. Tight ends, Dalton Schultz, Brevin Jordan, played 2 games since 2024. Remember Tegan Quatoriano? He is hanging on with the Arizona Cardinals on their practice squad. Cade Stover, still here. Anybody remember of Brendan Bates? Played 12 games. Brendan Bates, out of the NFL. Harrison Bryant, out of the NFL. Offensive line, he's got 9 guys who are played on the offensive line in the last 3 years who aren't in the NFL anymore. 25 guys in 3 years since he stepped foot on the field that's played with them in 2023. 25 guys aren't on 53-man rosters right now. 20 of them are completely out of the league. Those 9 linemen, 5 of them starters to start seasons. Kenyon Green, not in the league anymore. George Fant, not in the league anymore. Shaq Mason, not in the league anymore. Lakin Tomlinson, not in the league anymore. Cam Robinson, not in the league anymore. Those guys were all pegged to be starters in the last 3 years. You look at this, and everybody talks, Clint, and says, all right, yeah, he hasn't had a great offensive coordinator. Yeah, he hasn't had, you know, a great offensive line. Yeah, there have been injuries. But the thought of, like, the expectation seems to be, CJ, we just going to give you this ish and you make something out of it. And the thing is, when you look at this, is he has done that. He has repeatedly. He has made something out of it. So when you ask me, why do you think he is that good? Why do you believe that this guy is a good quarterback? Because at 24 years old, this is what they've given him. This is what has happened. And mind you, Clint, some of these top guys that are on the list, they have all been injured or unavailable in major times. Tank has never played in a playoff game or played past week 14. Nico has missed tons of time, including the playoff game last year. Joe Mixon just missed the entire season last year. That is one mark. You know it better than I do of a quarterback. What do you do when you don't have it all perfect? He has never had it perfect. None of it. And he has still excelled, right? And people can just say, well, no, he is just completely sucked from his first year. You can forget the Colts game 2 years ago. You can forget him going one-on-one against Josh Allen and playing against him. You can forget what he did against Kansas City last year. You can forget what he did against the 49ers last year. Dude is a good quarterback that has been giving this. And you ask and wonder, why do you think he's a good quarterback? Why do you think he's worth $55 million? Because they gave it to Trevor. They gave it to Tua. Jared Goff gets it. Look at everything he has around him. So I can get, Clint, your thought. What is, hey, is he a pillar? Does he have enough? I can get that conversation. I can get the conversation of, hey, man, we got Will Anderson, we got Daniil Hunter, we got Kamari Lashner, we got all these guys on this defense, man. I want to keep that together. Is he worth that? I can get that conversation. But don't give me the understanding that you don't get in his 3 years why he is somebody that would be worth or talked about as a franchise quarterback. He has done exactly what you would want. He has been given ish, and he has made something out of it every single year.
Well done. What you just did was you laid out, I've said it a million times, if I'm CJ Stroud in his camp, I ain't taking nothing less than something I can't walk away from. And if I'm the Texans, I'm hesitant to put it out there. If you just laid out every reason why CJ Stroud, even in a moment where the last time we saw him on the field, it was ugly. It was historically bad, right? Even in that moment, CJ Stroud can still look him in the eye and go, nah, you got to do better than that. You got to do better than that. And if I were CJ Stroud, it's exactly where I'd be. You just laid it out as well as anybody can lay it out. You have given me ish, and I have won 10-plus games. Hell, last year, 10 in a row, and gone to the second round of the playoffs 3 straight years.
I would like to also throw in a secret here. Guys, that defense that played last year, that's not the defense he's had every year. This has not been a defense that's just dragging C.J. Stroud in the offense every year. That first year that he was here and they went to the playoffs and lost to the Ravens, it was a good defense. They weren't what we just watched this year. Mm-mm. 2 years ago, they were a good defense, a better defense, top 10 defense. They weren't this. We're talking about historic worthy, where they didn't even need people. It felt like at times to win games. He ain't been sitting here with that defense this entire time. He has been the one dragging. Text line coming in. You sound like you're on CJ's payroll. It sounds like that was wired to you from David Mulligetta. No, it's not wired to me. It's factual. It is literally factual, right? Like he has been expected.
He faxed it.
He did. He faxed it. He's been expected to just turn water to wine. And in 3 years at 24, he's done it. He's done it every year. Justin Herbert, you know what? Justin Herbert, he's been screwed by injuries. He's got John Harbaugh. How many playoffs wins does Justin have? None. All those dudes, Herbert, Trevor, Tua, they all got paid. They got one playoff win combined. And it's because Trevor beat Justin, who blew a touchdown lead.
A couple weeks ago, Jaden Higgins tore his ACL, out for the year. A few days after that, Kayshon Booty became a Houston Texan, former wide receiver for the New England Patriots. After the Patriots traded him to the Texans, this is what Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel had to say about Kayshon Booty.
It was one place where we do have some depth, and you know, I think for all parties involved, that was probably the best thing. You know, without injuries, you know, Kayshon probably would have been inactive. Unfortunately, it's kind of the way it was. It's just with this, you know, him not playing special teams. And I tried to thank Kayshon as many times as I could. I texted him again today. His maturity, his growth, you know, his ability to put into words last year and share his own personal struggle. But
so that was Mike Vrabel. We didn't need the whole rest of that. The key to that was his role was going to sound like Seth due to the trade for A.J. Brown, the signing of Romeo Doubs, some of the other young guys like Kyle Williams they have in the building. Kayshon Booty was going to have a diminished role on the team in a contract year.
Yeah.
So Kayshon Booty met with the Houston media for the first time yesterday and was asked about Mike Vrabel's comment. You heard Vrabel at the end there talking about his maturity and how he's grown as a person and as a player. Here's Kayshon Booty yesterday when asked about Vrabel's comments.
They did pay two guys to come in and do that job. Sadly, it is the way it is, you know. Being that it's a contract year for me, I seek the bigger role. I feel like what Vrabe said in his media interview, it wasn't nothing bad. I wouldn't say I used that as fuel, you know. At the end of the day, he sat there. It was an honest opinion. He sat there, talked, speak his truth, and pretty much moved forward from it.
Okay. I thought that answer, when I saw the caption on the audio, I'm like, Booty comments on Vrabel's comments.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And I thought, honestly, I thought what he ended up saying, which is what we just heard right there, is actually an example of what Mike Vrabel was saying about Kayshon Booty, is the maturity level and things like that.
And when you talk about his maturity level, note too that Booty had 3 different head coaches his first 3 years in the NFL. He's now on his 4th head coach in 4 years. And he was a guy that's been very open about how immature he was when he was in college and his first couple years in the NFL. At one point, he considered quitting. He walked out of the building, was sitting in his car, and thought about quitting his rookie year. Like, he had, it's been a long road for him since he had an incredible freshman season and then had injuries at LSU, had substance issues. Like, he's had a rocky road. But over the course of his first 3 years in the NFL, he really grew up a lot. And he went from being a guy that complained about not getting enough targets to being a guy that was just realized, okay, I'm going to do what the coaches asked me to do. I'm going to keep my mouth shut and I'm just going to play football, and ended up doing some really good things for them last year. But the one wrinkle in all of that is, man, if he had been a special teams contributor and if he did work on that part of his game or what have you, maybe he'd still be with the Patriots. So if you're wondering, like, wow, he's not in the top six of the Patriots wide receivers, why are the Texans excited about getting him? It's that dynamic. You keep five or six wide receivers active on game day,
yep,
and you need a couple of them to be really active on special teams, and he's just not a special teams
guy. I think almost assuredly they don't trade for him without the Higgins injury.
So it
filled a need for the Texans. Here's Booty yesterday on what he brings to the Texans.
It's not really bad. It's half of it is carryover from what we kind of ran in New England. But at the end of the day, it's all about how much you put into it, too. You know, you got to study outside the building.
That's okay. You could have played the rest of it. That was Kayshon Booty talking about the playbook and how some of it carries over with coming to the Houston Texans.
Yeah, as a reminder to anybody that doesn't know, Ben McDaniels, the wide receivers coach, is brother to Josh McDaniels,
yes,
the offensive coordinator. And many of you might be surprised to learn that the Texans have got a lot of the elements of New England on this offense.
Yeah,
right,
I don't know
now.
If you've heard. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
You heard the good news. Yeah.
But philosophically, like, the names, some of the names are going to be different, some of the terminology will be different, but a lot of the concepts of what Josh McDaniels likes to do in the passing game is exactly what Nick Caley's trying to do in the passing game.
Here is Booty on what he brings to the Texans.
Just big playmaking ability, you know, whether it's short routes, mid routes, deep routes, go ball, you know, I'm going to always build that trust every day with CJ. So the
interesting thing about Booty in New England was that he had a very limited route tree. Like, half of his routes were either go balls or digs. And that's what they majored in with him. He also lined up on the outside to an extreme degree. Guess who else lines up on the outside on the line of scrimmage to an extreme degree? Nico Collins. That it's one of the common complaints amongst fans is they just don't move him around much. Why don't you use him like Puka when they get him in motion and have him in the slot, have him off the line of scrimmage? So, like, you can't have both those guys be the X receiver. I think Booty's the one that's going to be interesting to watch and see how the Texans use him in maybe, I'm guessing, a more diverse set of responsibilities and roles than he was in New England, which might unlock something in him.
Yeah.
Because they had Booty's backup, they operated basically the same way with him, like the same route tree and everything. So,
yeah,
it might have been as much a part of Josh McDaniels and how he was working with Drake May than it was about Booty's skill set.
Text message. Sean said we didn't need the rest of that Vrabel soundbite. We did. It gives context and show Vrabel wasn't being malicious. I played the part where he cited his maturity. Let me handle the show, Texter, okay? I know what we do and don't need. Don't mess with me today. I'm on a clear liquid diet for 24 hours.
Yeah, listen. When was the last time you ate?
Last night, dinner time. A light dinner at dinner time. A chicken salad sandwich.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't usually eat breakfast, do you?
I eat it after the show.
Oh, okay.
I go to Avalon Diner after the show.
So it shouldn't affect you that much right now.
I'm hungry right now.
Yeah. You should have. This is a key, Sean. Having been through a bunch of surgeries, you got to load up for that final meal. You got to eat it like it's the last supper.
I was told, I asked if I could. They said, no, a light dinner. Because I messed up.
So,
for those who don't know, I won't be here tomorrow. But I mentioned in my Salento spots, I'm getting the Inspire sleep apnea implant tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about this. So as part of the surgery, as part of the lead up to it, I'm an older guy. I take a few medications, right?
Yeah.
There's one particular medication that I take, which, because I've got this surgery coming up, I wasn't supposed to take this week. It's a once a week medication. I wasn't supposed to take it.
It's a once a week Viagra.
No, I can still take that.
Okay.
And it's Blue Chew, by the way.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, thank you. Respect the sponsor. But I accidentally took it. This medication. So when the hospital called yesterday to go through the final checklist, They're like, okay, here are your medications. When was the last time you took this one? And I said, Tuesday. And they said, okay, well, that's you weren't supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And so they check with my doctor.
Did you not read through the 29-page pamphlet we gave you?
No, dude, honestly, this was in the doctor's handwriting. Like, I messed up.
Yeah.
I messed up. So they called my doctor, and the doctor said, we can still do the surgery, but you've got to do a clear liquid diet for the entire 24 hours leading up to, which is today.
Yeah.
So, I'm not like hungry as I would be quite yet.
Yeah.
But it's looking ahead as what the rest of this day is going to be is going to put me in a mood where I don't need people telling me how to run the show.
Vodka is a clear liquid.
I don't think that's a great point, Seth. I need to check on that.
You got him on a technicality,
Sean. Yeah, I'm going to be hammered at this surgery tomorrow.
I don't need no sticking anesthesia. Well,
here's the other thing.
Or any antiseptic, dude, for that matter.
I'm going to the Texans season premiere tonight.
Oh.
Which is like
it's a gala.
It's a gala. It's a nice dinner. And I'm going to be sitting there drinking water and chicken broth.
Yeah. You're not going to be gay at all at this gala.
I will not be gay. No. I will not be frolicking.
Not tonight.
No gayness tonight, man. Yeah. So I got that tonight. So anyways, I said all that to say, Texter, I played enough to where Vrabel said nice things about Kayshawn Booty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't show Vrabel in his full magnanimousness, you bastard.
There was like 11 seconds left of it, all right?
He was more magnanimous than that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Let's go. In the loop, Sean Bajani in for Reggie Atatula, taking you into the weekend that officially has college football. We'll get to that,
man,
a little bit later on, man. I know guys like Lopez and a lot of people around here. Tyler's already here this morning. Giddy for college football season to start. Hell, we'll get to this a little bit later on.
Hell, I was plugged into last night's game.
Colorado, Georgia Tech, baby, last night.
That was something.
I forgot there were multiple reasons to watch that which we will address a little bit later on. But for right now, as we welcome you back in, Figgy Fig producing, John Lopez, Sean Bajani, got you till 2 o'clock. 713-572-4610 if you'd like to weigh in on the program via the text line, Twitch, YouTube chat there for you as well. Your old co-host, Nick Wright, makes a lot of headlines all the time, especially around this time of the year with college and NFL getting going. Nick Wright said the Jacksonville Jaguars have far and away the best quarterback in the division. And with C.J. Stroud, you know, we know what this season means for him. Is him just being good and good enough, is that enough, even with this defense? A lot of questions. First off, right off the top, what did you think about Nick Wright and what his stomping for Trevor Lawrence, which has been a thing?
Yeah, not just stomping. I mean, he actually had trumpeters come in and blow their horns. Trumpeters come in when he was talking about Trevor Lawrence. That part of it is kind of a bit. But when he said far and away, you know, the best quarterback in the division, that hits you a certain way.
What's that all about?
Well, it depends on who you are and how you feel about, you know, C.J. Stroud. It either hits you with like, get out of here, you know, far and away, or it kind of hits you in a way. And I am a fan of C.J. Stroud. You know, we know that because I've talked about what he is and, you know, what he's done. We all have, you know, but it's just a matter of what's going on between the ears. So it did hit me. Okay, suppose he's right. Suppose Trevor Lawrence is far and away a better quarterback than C.J. Stroud. That's where I went. Like, okay, what if he is second year in with Liam Cohen, you know, second year in this offense, bolstered the offense a little bit with some weapons. If he is an elite quarterback and faces this defense, first of all, we're not too scared because of this defense. But elite quarterbacks have made plays in crucial moments, even against this defense. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's
you know
Matthew Stafford, you know, and these guys aren't elite, but
hell,
really
look at the first month of the season last year, all the
Baker
quarterbacks
Mayfield,
that got loose on the Texans defense.
You know, Bo Nix. Like, even against this defense, if you have a quarterback that is really, really good, that can be trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I went. So how good what does that mean for C.J. Stroud? How good does he have to be able to – we keep talking about, well, as long as we have this defense, elite quarterbacks have made won games. You know, they've made big plays. Even when you sacked Josh Allen 8 times, they had a chance to win the game at the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Because Josh Allen is an elite quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even against this
defense. They're never out of a game.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I was thinking about. I was like, we keep thinking, you know, don't worry, we got this defense. But if he's that good, CJ Stroud has to be better than what we've all been saying.
He still got to make plays.
Right. He's got to be better than what, because all we've been saying collectively, and I'm generalizing, but I think most of us would fall in this category of just be good. You know, just be good enough. Be acceptable. I think he's got to be better than that against something once you get to that level of play.
Yeah. I feel like it has been clouded significantly, though, by the way that the last two games he played went. You know, with the 5 fumbles, 5 interceptions, you know, the NFL history behind that, and doing it at a moment in time in which it was so, you felt like you were never this close before as a Houston Texan fan to crossing that threshold and going to a title game, and then you have that. Because, of course, you know, they Texan. No, it's... We've been clouded. Like, we've seen the clutch CJ Stroud before. We saw it not just in his rookie season, but we saw it in his second season. We know that the guy can lead fourth quarter drives, fourth quarter comebacks. We've seen all that, and he's done it within games where he hadn't thrown for 380 yards and 4 scores. So I think that is there. And my biggest thing was the far and away. Like, without the shadow of a doubt, Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback within this division, and it ain't close.
Right. That's what he's saying.
Okay. Ron Hughley, by the way, did a fantastic job of arguing for CJ Stroud, you know, yesterday in looking at his history and everything that he has done, and fairly so, everything that he has not done. But there's far more reason to point at the good than that of the bad. The bad is very minimal. But it's about what you've got built around him now. Like, it took the Jags 4 years to figure out how to build around Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
And to stop screwing up, changing head coaches, stop screwing up and changing offensive coordinators. The one thing that the Texans have done right is there is complete alignment within a system that, you know what, at the end of the day, we'll have to wait and see. It may not be the best one suited for CJ Stroud. Nick Caserio could be dead ass wrong on that. But at least they're trying. They're not trying to fit total square peg through round hole in the sense that you've got a quarterback coach who's in your quarterback's ear more than anybody else that's familiar and an expert in this system and not this one that they're implementing. You've got that now with your O-line. You've got it now with the tight end. You've got it now with your quarterback coach. Top to bottom, across the board, that's what I like best. And that's why I don't think you can fairly say far and away, because is CJ Stroud's rookie season better than anything that Trevor Lawrence had done before last year?
Oh, yeah.
Because you could say it's very much recency bias.
But here's the question, though. You know, the one thing that Trevor Lawrence found, you know, finally with Liam Cohen, is a guy that would let him do what he loves to do and let it rip a little bit. And that's what C.J. Stroud has been wanting to do. So I keep going back and forth because it's like, you're right. They're all in alignment. They have a system. But is that the system that is going to allow C.J. Stroud to be in the same category as Trevor Lawrence? I mean, they run the ball on the record. Head coach, general manager, we are going to run the ball. They're bringing in tight ends. They only have 5 wide receivers. They throw to the back out of the backfield. You know, my point is, do they even want him to be an elite quarterback? Elite in terms of wins, yes.
Yeah.
But like an elite quarterback that can just, you know, win a game by himself at the end.
I think so.
You know what I mean?
You have to have that in this league, John. That's why Pat Mahomes exists. That's why Tom Brady's existed. The greats, and it's not just that they're, you know, they've been one of ones and they're the few, the proud.
Sure.
No, you have to have that quality in your quarterback. And I think the want to, the necessity to be able to run the ball that the way that DeMeco Ryans and the Houston Texans have been wanting and think they can now run the football, all that does is open up opportunities for C.J. Stroud to make those plays down the field as opposed to forcing them and making them sometimes. Like, we're talking about C.J. Stroud and the Nico Collins and the Xavier Hutchinson connections because, well, that stuff had to happen in the course of a debacle of a play, right? Where it was blown up. What if you get those explosive a la 2023, 2024 that we saw with Tank Dell when he was birthing, when Nico Collins was birthing into a number one wide receiver in the league and a top five one at that?
Yeah.
That's what I think this is really all about. Not just the, well, you know, we want to be safe here and pay the quarterback $70 million, $60 million, whatever it is. No. They want that to just be a cleaner, I think, more efficient phase.
They do. It's just, you know, you have a head coach that wants to run the ball, prefers field goals over touchdowns, you know, in certain situations, rather than turn the ball over. He's on the record with that, too. You know, whatever, just don't turn. And I'm not saying this is all wrong. All I'm saying is, in terms of being allowing him, like if it's third and eight, this is the example I always give. If it's third and eight on the opposing 35-yard line, the Houston Texans are going to run the ball and kick a field goal. I don't think the Jacksonville Jaguars are. I think they're going to trust their quarterback to go ahead and try to make that. You know what I'm saying? So that's where I think maybe the little margins.
Yeah, man, third and eight.
They're going to run the ball and kick field goal.
I just disagree with you on that. What do you think, Fit?
I do have a question for y'all. Who would y'all rather have at quarterback, Trevor Lawrence or C.J. Stroud?
In a perfect world, C.J. Stroud. You know, but given what I'm saying, though, is – I'm not saying he's hamstrung by it or handcuffed by it or whatever term you want to use. All I'm saying is, like, the template for his success is much thinner, is much smaller. Whereas, you know, with Liam Cohen, they're going to be throwing the ball and letting him, you know, sling it a little bit.
Yeah. Real quick, I just kind of want to get to this. Who do you think could get them to a Super Bowl with the Texans defense, C.J. Stroud or Trevor Lawrence? If Trevor Lawrence was on this team, do you feel like they have a better chance to get to a Super Bowl?
I think he'd be doing the same thing as C.J. Stroud. They would, because of what they want out of their quarterback.
I know what you're doing.
I'm legit asking.
I think it's a great question, but I would answer the question with this question. What if I would have asked you that, or what if you would have asked that 2 years ago? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before Trevor Lawrence figured it out with Liam Cohen, vice versa, right? Before C.J. Stroud had 10 turnovers in the most promising season for Houston Texans franchise to date. Like, what if that? Because we're not entertaining that. We're still thinking about C.J. Stroud having the best rookie season for a quarterback in history before Jaden Daniels did it the following year, right? We're still talking about C.J. Stroud on an ascension, not a possible descension.
Correct.
So it's a very recency bias thing. I would say, why aren't we willing to give a guy who we've already seen marked success from and leadership qualities that exude a potential franchise quarterback for a long time? Why aren't you giving that guy, C.J. Stroud, the same opportunity that the Jacksonville Jaguars have Trevor Lawrence? And look how that's worked out for them.
Yeah. It seemed like they took it away, right? If anything.
That's kind of where I landed with this. Yeah. Like, 'cause I can't say, I don't think any of us can say, as much as I think we would all take C.J. Stroud in a bubble over Trevor Lawrence, I can't sit here and say, oh, Nick, you're wrong. He's not, maybe not head and shoulders, or however you put it, far and away. But right now you can't say, honestly, based on the last couple of years, that C.J. Stroud is clearly better than...
If you look at the year Trevor Lawrence recently had, and then the year C.J. Stroud recently has, especially if you want to count that playoff game, it's hard to sit here and say Nick is totally wrong on it. Mm-hmm. But me personally, I still rather have C.J.
Exactly.
I can't get that rookie year out of my brain, man, because I know it's there. Mm-hmm. And like Lopez said earlier, maybe it is between the ears. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is something mentally, or it could be the play calling, the scheme.
I tend to look at things like this when Nick Wright says it is like a meteorologist, right? Hey, look out. Eduardo's coming. All right, go get all of the waters right now. You know, stack up, and then it misses you by 180 miles north.
I ain't gonna lie. I did think about that. Yeah. I'm like, Nick is always wrong on his predictions. Mm-hmm. So maybe he might have this really ass backwards, where it might be the opposite.
I think it's too soon. Like, when it's far away, it looks like it's headed right for your ass. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We feel very far away from knowing what C.J. Stroud can really do because of the 10 turnovers this past postseason.
Yeah.
All right, Clint, next week we get in here on Monday, or Tuesday, excuse me, it's Labor Day, isn't it? We get in here on Tuesday, fellas, game week. It's game week. The Texans will be getting ready to take on the Buffalo Bills. Hell, maybe their toughest at least one of their top three toughest games of the season. The Bills, who are second behind the Rams when it comes to Super Bowl MVP odds on DraftKings.
Let's get it on, baby.
They come into town, and they have had great success the last couple of years against them, winning with Davis Mills once as the quarterback, winning with C.J. Stroud. Both of those times they gave Josh Allen two of his worst games they played. But I think a big matchup that we're going to be talking about and looking at, and I think where the game may be determined, is up front. And many people think it will be up front with Buffalo trying to be able to handle the Texans pass rush, which I think is obviously going to be a big part too. But also on the other side, Clint, is going to be the Texans offensive line and their ability to be able to run the football the way they want to run the football, Clint, and then be able to pass the game, pass the ball off of their run game the way they want to. Can they protect? Can they run the football? Those were obvious issues. Depending on what you look at, they were rated in the 30s last year in both running and pass blocking, according to some places when it comes to their offensive line. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, former Texan, he is now with the Bills. He will come in here on Sunday, coming up week one. This was his thoughts, his conversation about what he is seeing every day in practice with his defensive line.
I don't want to put no bulletin board material up there, but they like the line I play with in the Super Bowl. Shit, I got guys up front. Like, I don't got just names. I got guys up front. So I'm drafted guys, T.J. Parker, Zane, Penn State, correct? Like, we got named guys that actually can make plays, so we're not just depending on one person. Doesn't make it easy as a D-line. We got a plethora of guys that you just go out there, rotate, and keep them fresh. And Chubb got them going the right. Hey, Chubb! Pluto! Deuce! You know, that's my guy. With that guy right there leading the charge, I feel comfortable. And Ed. So I forgot about my workhorse. I forgot about Ed. Those two itself alone is just going to dominate. And just wait to see them go.
All right, there is C.J. Gardner-Johnson talking about his defensive line. And listen, I'll be honest with you, the Bills' defensive line throughout the last year and throughout the years, they have sucked. That has been a weak part of their team. And last year, it was just it was even worse. Now, Clint, I don't know if they're rolling out there with Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis and Nolan Smith and who was that? Milton Williams, who was on that team that they went to the Super Bowl with the Eagles that he was referencing. Josh Sweat, I believe, was on that team. I don't know that they're rolling in like that, Clint, at all. We'll have to see that. But last couple of years, last year specifically, they were one of the worst teams in terms of stopping the run and one of the worst teams in terms of rushing the passer. So they were rough. They were as bad as the Texans' offensive line was and those things as their defensive line was. They've got some guys there, Ed Oliver, who he talked about, Bradley Chubb. Those are the name ones. You know, Greg Rousseau, another one, 7 sacks off the edge. T.J. Sanders, a young player. They drafted T.J. Parker in the second round from Clemson. So they've got some new additions to this group, Clint. But I think a big deal is to see how this offensive line handles a defensive line like this. Because I wouldn't look at this, Clint, and think this is a great defense. This ain't the Rams. This ain't the Texans, right? This ain't Denver. They're going to face some tougher defensive lines. And I'm interested, what do you expect to see? What should you be seeing from our offensive line that the Texans are bringing to the table? What should you be seeing from them against this level of a defense?
Look, I think solid across the board. And when I say that, I'm talking we ought to run the football well and protect in a solid manner, right? I mean, I don't expect Keelan Rutledge to be perfect. I don't expect Ed Ingram to be perfect. I don't expect Evan Brown. Notice I'm mentioning the interior guys, right? I don't expect those three interior guys to be perfect, against this defense. Ed Oliver's going to be a problem. Ed Oliver's probably going to win a few battles inside. Maybe he wins several, right? But if it becomes an absolute scramble inside and just chaos inside, because there's a duck, whether it's Ingram, Brown, or Keelan Rutledge, and they're dialed in and getting the matchups they like inside and passing situations, then we could have a major problem, right? Again, the Texans, you hope, can run the football well enough to stay out of the third and mid, third to long situations. At least don't live in them to where the defense has a huge advantage. But the concern for me is in pass protection on the inside of the offensive line and particularly at the guard positions. I think Buffalo does have guys that they can get matchups inside and can be a matchup problem if we do indeed have a duck. Right. And so when you look at Keelan Rutledge, what is the concern? Pass protection. When you look at Ed Ingram, what is the concern? Pass protection. Right. And there's no quicker way for a defense to really cause problems for an offense than to have penetration, interior in the A gaps over the guard positions, whether we're talking about the run game or we're talking about a pocket for a quarterback to comfortably pass from. That interior pressure is a major problem. And I think the biggest unknown, if you will, I'm not going to call it a concern, but the biggest unknown that we have for the Texans offensively is, can we protect inside out? Can we protect guard, center, guard with C.J. Stroud? Can we protect in the moments, into half, into game? You know you got to throw the football. You got to get in field goal range. Maybe have score a touchdown. Can we protect in those moments, right? I mean, good Lord, I hope we can protect if we're running it well and we're running play action, quick token fakes, maybe long max protecting type situations. Good Lord, I hope we can protect in those moments. Can you protect in the pockets of the game when everybody knows you're going to pass it? The game is dictating that. The situation is dictating that. Can you hold your own at right guard and left guard? That's going to be the key.
Because, see, I look at this Buffalo team, and again, to me, Ed Oliver, is the only one where you look at and you're like, he could get away from you. You know, he could get a matchup with any of those three interior linemen, and if they blitz and set up one-on-ones, that could be a problem. You got a rookie who has never played in the NFL. You've got a center who has really been a kind of a backup level type center. And then you have Ed Ingram, who we know his weakness is pass protection. He is the only one to me that can get away. Like, Bradley Chubb is not the Bradley Chubb that was the one in Denver that was great. Greg Rousseau, a solid guy, but not a great pass rusher. I feel like the hope is that this group is able to handle that group, because they got some other groups, Clint. They got to run into.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm like when they play the Giants, that's probably not the name that the team that you immediately think of. But you start thinking about them Jokers. They keep drafting guys in the top five that are pass rushers. They got Burns. They've got about three or four guys. You start looking. Right after that, if Ed Oliver gets away from you, you got Dexter Lawrence next week, you know, and then if he gets away from him, you got DeForest Buckner, you know, the next week. I mean, he's getting older, but he doesn't suck. Then you Quinnen Williams and Von Miller and some of the guys that the Cowboys have as well. Jeffrey Simmons after that. So it is there are some groups that they will have to face that bring more to the table up front. I feel like they should be able to They should be able to handle this. If they aren't in pass protection, Clint, I think there is something a little more to watch.
Yep.
If the Bills get away from them in terms of rushing the passer and stopping the run.